Well, hey, church, glad to see you guys this morning. Years ago, when I went to college, I went to a school called Liberty University. It's located in Virginia. And as a 19-year-old kid, I was introduced to Southerners, okay? And I didn't realize when I went that how much pride Southerners had about the South. And they actually looked down on people like me, who was a northerner, is what they would call me. I'm like, I've never been called a northerner. I guess Ohio's in the north, you know, we don't think about that kind of thing. Sometimes they'd call you a Yankee, all right, which is funny, because I'm like, you know, the first time I was called a Yankee, I'm like, dude, I hate the Yankees. I'm not the Yankee. I'm a Cleveland guy, you know what I mean? And they're like, no, all of you guys, all y'all, is what they would say, all y'all are Yankees up there. And after so much of that, meaning a couple weeks, I found it so annoying that I became like a self-expert on Ohio. You know, I'm like, well, stop. Ohio's not that bad, you know. And it's funny because going to school, I could care less about Ohio. But then at school, I became like an Ohio fanatic, right, because of that. I had to push back. And so I learned all the best things about Ohio. I knew all the things that any Ohioan had ever invented, all right? I knew all the famous people from Ohio. I knew all the records that had been broken in Ohio by whatever it might have been, all right? I knew all the championships that any team in Ohio had ever won. Like, I knew everything. In fact, my buddy, Jeff, who was actually from our church, and it was from the area, we actually went down there together. But we were known as, like, the Ohio guys. And everybody in our dorm and everybody in our classes, like everybody knew, all right, that we were all about the state of Ohio. Now, one of the things that the school did, which was kind of unique, is each year they had this thing called the Parade of Nations, okay? And what they would do was they would have all the students that were from all the various countries around the world, that they would come and they would dress in their, like, traditional, you know, garb or whatever that might be, and they would have a flag representing their country, and there would be about 150 or so countries represented here, and they would fill up the basketball arena, which had about 10,000 people in there, and they would parade through the basketball arena, and they would do like a big thing about other nations and missions and diversity and just all that kind of stuff on stage. But in order to get there, they would parade through with their flags and everything else. They're all dressed up in different ways, and they would go to the stage and be kind of this big old thing. And everybody on campus had to attend. And so Jeff and I, we were kind of joking around one day. We're like, hey, you know what we should do? We should get the Ohio flag, right? Buckeye Nation needs to be represented, and we should jump in to the parade, and we could wave our flag around and kind of be a big old thing. Now, we were just joking around, or at least I was, but what Jeff started doing from that moment on is he started going around and telling everybody that on the day of the Parade of Nations that Zach was going to jump in with the Ohio flag and do all this stuff. And so the time came where it was like morning of, and he's like, "You gonna do it?" And everybody on my hall and everybody in my dorm, and, you know, I've had people all over campus that are just like, "Hey, so you're gonna do it? Huh? You're gonna do it? I heard Jeff told me that you were gonna do this, so, you know, you're gonna do that." And so it was like, I was kind of stuck where I'm like, I have to do this. And we both walked over, actually grabbed my flag, because I had a trusty flag whenever I needed it, and I grabbed my Ohio flag, and I remember walking into the arena. You know, I'm like trying to hide it. I'm like, oh, don't mind me. Just got an extra flag here. And I remember walking up, and we're standing on top of the arena. It's kind of like you walk in on ground level, and then everything is down from there. And then you got the basketball court down below. And again, this is it's a big arena. It has about 10,000 seats. And I remember standing up there, and I'm dressed in my Buckeye, you know, normal attire, got my Ohio State stuff on, I'm like ready to go. And I remember the music starts playing, and I'm holding my flag, and I'm like, dang, like, I'm out of time. Like, I gotta make this decision whether I'm gonna do this or not. And then Jeff, he's like in my ear, he's like, hey, see ya, gotta go. We'll all be watching, you know. And I'm like standing there by myself, and I'm like, all right, I have a choice that I have to make, and time is like not on my side. Like, I'm out of time. And I just remember kind of struggling with that. It was like all this pressure. Like, I have to decide. Now, we've all been there that way before. I mean, picture it. You're back in middle school, right? You're getting ready to ride the big ride at Cedar Point, the big roller coaster. You know, you're the last one or you're the next one up. And you're like, okay, all right, like it's happening. There's nothing I can do. Like, am I going to choose to do this? I could do the walk of shame, you know, and just walk across and everybody looks at you and it's so embarrassing, okay? Or I'm going to ride this thing. Like it's that. We've been in that place before where we are faced with a decision and time is not on your side because you are completely out of it and you have to make a decision, right? Am I going to go or am I not? Right? Am I going to pick this major or that major? Am I going to accept this job or am I going to make a pass on that? Am I going to buy this or not? Am I going to move my family or am I not going to move my family? Should I buy this house? Should I not buy this? Whatever it might be, that pressure and that tension, we've all felt it before where we have to make an important decision. I mean, it presses in on us. And many times for us, the stakes are much higher than are my friends going to think I chickened out if I don't do it? Like, you know, many times it's way more, the stakes are just so much higher than that, right? Many times it's, am I going to do the right thing or am I going to do the normal thing? Am I going to do life God's way or am I going to do it the world's way, right? Like when my boss wants me to do this thing or when my professor is completely against God and my friends are always pulling me in the wrong direction or we look at our government, we look at our president, we're like, okay, whoever they are, whatever party, it's like, wow, they don't value the same things that I value. Or when we just look at the world that is all around us, we're like, man, the world is just in opposition to the way of life that God has called me to live. The question is, what are we going to choose? When we're faced with those choices and we at that very moment have to decide, right? Today, we're going to be looking at a famous story. I'm kind of excited about it because this is going to be a fun one to go through. And this is a story that maybe you remember back from like, I don't know, Sunday school when your grandma used to drag you to church back when you were a kid. And we're going to look at a great example of three young Jewish guys who, when faced with all kinds of political pressure, and when the world is coming down on them, saying, hey, you need to conform or else, and when they're faced with a choice, in one awkward, tension-filled moment, right, they choose to do what was right over what was popular. And we're going to see this starting off in Daniel chapter 3, verse 1. It says, King Nebuchadnezzar, all right, by the way, we know him by now, okay? King Nebuchadnezzar, he's the man. I mean, he is the most powerful man on the planet at this point. He is the ruler over the Babylonian Empire, which had conquered basically everybody. This was a world empire. And King Nebuchadnezzar had made a gold statue that was 90 feet high and 9 feet wide. And he set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Now, if you remember, do you remember how chapter 2 ended last week? No. Okay, let me refresh you. Okay, I wasn't prepared for this, but we'll do this real quick. All right, Nebuchadnezzar, if you remember, he had some weird dreams. All right, it's like the same weird dream. Okay, there you go. Everybody's like, oh, weird dreams. All right, everybody's in on that. And if you remember, it's this weird dream about a statue that it represents, we found out, the empires that would rise and fall after Nebuchadnezzar lives. And ultimately, if you remember in that dream that he keeps happening, is a rock falls from like this mountain thing and it smashes into the statue and the statue comes crumbling down and it kind of freaks Nebuchadnezzar out. In fact, it really, really, really bothers him. And so Daniel happens to come on the scene, and Daniel, who's a Jewish guy, he's a God follower, he's young, Daniel comes and he says, hey, here's the deal. This is what's happening with this weird dream that you keep having, is that God is giving you a heads up on what is going to happen in the future. And what God is trying to communicate to King Nebuchadnezzar is, hey, nations will rise and fall, which, by the way, includes our own nation here today. Nations will rise and fall, but one day God's kingdom will come. And so this message was really to two different kinds of people. The message number one was to Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians saying, hey, you're in power now, all right, but there's an expiration date on your power, and you will fall like all kingdoms do, right? And not only that, but Nebuchadnezzar, you are only in power because God has decided to allow it. And actually, God's the one in control. It's not actually you. And so the response to that should be, you need to acknowledge that God's the man, that he's in control, and then you need to worship, all right? So that's one thing. To the other group of people, it's also, this dream is to the believers, people like Daniel and Daniel's three friends that we're going to be looking at today, right? Remember, there's a bunch of God followers that had been deported to Babylon, right, to live there from their homeland in Israel. And so to them, the message is, hey, your God rules over the nations, and you think that your country's so out of control, and you think the political climate is just not in your favor, and just things just aren't that fair. Well, here's the deal. He's still in control, and even if the political chaos feels out of control right now, right, his kingdom is coming in the future. And so the response, our response to that should be, well, hope. And so Nebuchadnezzar, his response was, meh. If you remember what he said specifically, he says, your God is indeed the God of gods and the Lord of kings. And so Nebuchadnezzar, he responds well, but only for a little while. Because here he builds a 9-story statue that was huge. It's completely overlaid with gold, right? And the question is, why? And his reasoning may have been because he is a ruler over a huge and expanding empire, and he might be thinking, hey, as we absorb other nations, what we need to do is we need to get us all on the same page, like religiously. And so he was totally cool with all of us, with his whole country, like worshiping all these other gods and different gods. But in his mind, it may have been, hey, let's have one God in common. And ultimately, this God and this statue specifically, right, it pointed back to Nebuchadnezzar's power and his greatness. What his thinking was, right, I'll create a God who believes everything that I believe. We get that people still do that today, right? Right? Like even some of us in this room, this is what we do. We think, well, I believe in God. I like the idea of God. God's cool. Okay, he comes and saves us and loves us and, you know, all this good stuff. And so what I think is, I think God would be like this. And so that's what I believe. Or what some of us do, or what some people in the world do, what the world does is they pick and choose parts of the Bible that we like, and then we throw away the parts of the Bible that we don't like. Okay? I don't like punishment. I don't like wrath, right? So I'm going to throw that out, but I'd really like the love part. And so, yeah, he's all loving and all accepting and just all that stuff. By the way, there's churches all over town that do that. I mean, the world does that. Pick and choose the parts about God that they like. Throw away the stuff that they don't like. See, Nebuchadnezzar, he does the same thing. But the difference between him and us is he actually builds it. And so that's what he does. He creates this huge statue. And then he sends word to all of the important people, the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, just all the most important people in the entire empire. And he sends word for them to attend the dedication of the statue that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And so they all come. And some of them travel from miles and miles and miles, like days and days and days. They all come to this statue for its dedication. And then they all stood before the statue that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Now, can you picture this? All right, try to picture this. Some of you guys are like, no, not at all. All right, try it. Use your imagination. All right? Imagine this scene. You got some scholars, actually, they believe that there was maybe 1 million people that were here for this. All right, can you picture that? 1 million people may have come to this. Basically, anyone who is anyone is here. All levels of government, they got this huge statue that they're standing before. It's super intimidating. Nothing had ever been built on this level before. And then off to the side, you got this like furnace that's there that was actually used to create the statue and melt all the gold and everything that the statue was covered in. And that, so that's kind of off to the side. And everybody's standing there going, okay, all right, let's dedicate this thing. We'll get out of here. All right, that's a pretty sweet statue. Good for King Nebuchadnezzar. And then they're told, they hear that people from every nation and language, you guys are all gathered here, right? You are all commanded, right? This is not an ask here, right? This is not a request. They say, when you hear the sound of the horn, flute, lyre, all these things, basically the band, right? You are to fall face down and worship the gold statue that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. But whoever does not fall down and worship, just throwing this out there, you will immediately be thrown into the furnace of blazing fire, all right? This is going to happen immediate. We're all going to watch it. This is not, you don't get some trial, all right? You don't get to make a defense. There is no prison time here. This is not next year or next week or tomorrow. This has happened immediately, all right? This will happen today. And so basically, you got 1 million people there, and everybody is watching, and everybody is listening, and they're all told, hey, if you don't worship this that King Nebuchadnezzar is telling you to worship, then you will be thrown into that. And everybody looks at the furnace like, oh, I don't want that. Basically, you will submit or you will be dealt with. See, here Nebuchadnezzar's goal, straight up power move, all right? That's what it is. It's the, I want all you important people to obey me. And so I'm going to give you this command. And specifically, I want you to obey me by worshiping my statue that I have built. And all you important people, I want you guys to watch all the other important people do it. And so this will serve a really, 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 as a really good reminder about who is actually in charge, that it's the king and not you, right? And so Daniel and his three friends, right? Actually, not Daniel. Daniel's not around for this story. But Daniel's three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who we were introduced to a couple weeks ago, right? They get the invite, and they stand in the sea of people, and they hear this command. And I imagine kind of what they're thinking. They're just like, they look at the statue, kind of look at each other, then look at the furnace, you know, and they're just like, dang it. Like, this is not how I wanted to go. You know, and they're just like, man, this is rough. And they realize that they have a choice to make and that they are out of time. Now, for me, back when I was in school, and stupid, okay, when I stood atop of that arena in college with my Ohio flag, and I stood there, and I was like, you know, I'm just like, man, okay. And all the other flags started coming out, and people are waving them. And again, there's 10,000 people there, and the music starts playing. I had to make a choice, and because I was out of time. Now, for me, right, like I wasn't choosing between right or wrong or life and death, like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Like, that's not what this is. What I was doing was not a serious thing at all. But even I felt the tension of time running out, and even I understood, you know, that there was a choice that had to be made. And so, just so you know, just so you're not worrying or thinking about this for the rest of the message, as the music started playing, and each kid representing their country walked out with their flag, and 10,000 people watching, I did walk down, and I unhurled my flag, right, and I started waving it around, and I got right in line with everybody else, and Ohio was represented well that day. Just want to let you know. And then not only that, but out of all the pictures that would have been possibly taken, right, an hour later, it was posted on the website, and Ohio was the one represented, that whoever picked that picture had no idea, okay? And I'm not in it, so I couldn't get in trouble, which is even better, you know? So I'm just saying, in multiple ways, Ohio, that was up for like a week. It was awesome. And everybody, it was like, dude, your picture's up there. I'm like, I know. That's how we do in Ohio, okay? But here's the deal. For Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, right? They didn't have 10,000 people watching them. They had like a million, okay? There was way more people that were there. And then here's Nebuchadnezzar. He gives the orders. And the band starts playing their song. And they have to decide. It says, when all the people heard the sound of the band, it says, people of every nation and language, they all fell down. Now, they didn't. We think like, oh, you got to bow to the statue. It's just like, you know, like it's just kind of a sign of respect or something like that. No. That's not what this kind of bowing was. This was you get on your knees and you get down and you put your face to the dirt. That's the kind of bowing that this is. And everybody does it. A million people, if you could picture this, a million people get down on their knees and they all kiss the ground and they worship the gold statue that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. See, here's the deal. What do people do when faced with nonstop political pressure and social pressure 99.9% of the time? They bow. See, our world is constantly telling us, hey, you need to think like we think. You need to talk like we talk. You need to do what we do. Besides, everybody's doing it. And so as we change, meaning the world change, they say, hey, you need to change. And this is the political environment that we all live in. It's a bunch of social pressure to conform. And if you're sitting there thinking, hey, what candidate is he referring to? Stop. This is so much bigger than a political candidate. This infiltrates so much deeper than just kind of something that happens on the outside. This is happening within us. See, it's just plain and simple worldly pressure to live and think and act like the world instead of living and thinking and acting like God. Something that the enemy has been using against us God followers for thousands of years. Nothing has changed. And if you're a Christian, I hope that you have felt it. And if you don't feel it very often, that pressure, that tension of do I do this, do I do that? I'm just saying, then you're probably bowing. You just don't realize that you bow. See, we should feel this at work when our boss or our coworker wants us to do something that just kind of feels wrong, or when we're dealing with our family or within politics, or if we're a kid in the lunchroom, right? Like it doesn't matter. We all struggle with the same thing. And sometimes it's as simple as just the things that we talk about. Like some of us, the things that we talk and joke about with our buddies at work, I mean, dude, it's so worldly. See, the world wants to squeeze us into its mold, and the world applies the pressure. And the honest truth is that most of us, again, we bow without even realizing it. See, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they're stuck in a tough place for a few high school kids, right? I mean, these guys are young. But for them, it's like, man, I could bow, but it's almost like I'm cheating on God. Or I could stand, but then I lose my life. And so the music plays, and everybody bows, almost. Because in the middle of the sea of people, everybody has their face to the ground. There's three, maybe 17, 18-year-olds standing up, looking awkward, because that's what they do, right? And it's interesting, because years before, when they were 14 years old, for us, we talked about this a couple weeks ago. All right, remember when they took a stand with the whole food thing? You know, they took the stand, oh, we're not going to eat that food. They totally got away with that. That didn't really get much press. But this time, they're taking a stand in front of everybody. And I'm sure they're standing there going, man, I really hope no one notices. This is super awkward. But they're noticed. And so some Chaldeans, these would have been the king's advisors, right? They took the occasion to come forward, and they maliciously accused the Jews. All right, this word for maliciously accused, this is like the word literally means they were trying to like eat and devour them. All right, not physically, but that's what the word picture is. Like they're trying to eat them alive in that sense. All right, these people, they hate them. Right? These advisors, like they are bitter towards these three Jewish guys. If you remember after last week in chapter 2, how that ended is these boys get promoted. Remember that? Right? They get promoted to kind of the heads of different places. And so I'm sure this is kind of some workplace jealousy going on here. Maybe a little rivalry going on. And of course that never happens today, right? Like we've never experienced that. And so that's probably what's going on here. And so they're like, this is their opportunity, and they take it. And so they go to King Nebuchadnezzar, and they say, you know, they start off saying all the right things at all the right times. They're like, hey, king, may you live forever. Did I mention you're the best king? You're the best king who's ever lived. You are the king of kings. You are the most powerful man. Like, you are awesome king. And so you, king, just to remind you, right, like, you issued that decree that everyone who hears the sound of the band, that they have to fall down and worship the golden statue. And King Nebuchadnezzar is like, yep, pretty good decree, right? That's a pretty good idea. That was my idea, all mine. All right, pretty awesome. How do you like my statue? It's pretty sweet looking. And they're like, we love the statue. But you also remember the part of the decree that said, whoever does not fall down and worship, that they'll be thrown into a furnace of blazing fire. Pretty big deal. Nebuchadnezzar's like, yeah, that was my idea too. Pretty good one, huh? And here he says, well, there's some Jews who, I hate to break this to you, king, but you actually appointed them to manage the province of Babylon. What were their names again? I can't remember their names. It was Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, okay? Them. And they're like, these men, like I just heard, it's just kind of a rumor going around, not sure. Like, these men have ignored you. You're the king, right? Like, you, king, they ignored you, and they do not serve your gods or worship the gold statue that you have set up. And when Nebuchadnezzar hears this, he went into a furious rage. He is ticked that somebody would defy his orders. And so he gave orders to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in to see him. And so these men were brought before the king. And when they get there, Nebuchadnezzar, he asked him, he's like, okay, all right, let me get this straight. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, is it true? It's almost like he doesn't believe that this could possibly happen. He's like, he's got doubts in his mind. Like, I don't know. I don't know if this is true. It's almost like he can't believe it. And so he's probably thinking through. He's like, okay, is it true? And they're like, yeah, it's true. He's like, okay, did you not hear what I said? Or did you not understand? I know you're from like a different country and you speak a different language, although you've been learning our language and you know, you have different customs and stuff. Or did you just forget to bow? Like, what's the deal here? He says, is it true that you don't serve my gods or worship the gold statue that I have set up? I'm missing it here. And so here he is. He's having a pretty good day today, right? And Nebuchadnezzar is in a good mood. And so he says, now, if you are ready, right, I'm going to give you a second chance, right? By the way, that never happens, right? That never happens. This was a huge deal. Nebuchadnezzar, I'm just assuming, just by knowing kind of the things that he's doing, I don't think he gave second chances very often. But here he is. And what it shows us is that he must have really liked these guys. Like, he really liked them. He appreciated these guys. And so here he gives them a second chance. He says, if you're ready to now, when you hear the sound of the band, all right, what I want you guys to do, am I speaking clearly enough? I want you to fall down and worship the statue that I made. Okay? You guys got it? That's all you have to do. And let me just remind you, if you don't worship it, you will immediately be thrown into a furnace of blazing fire, and it's really hot in there. And that's not going to be pleasant. By the way, I know you're doing this because of like your attachment to your God or whoever your God might be, but can I, and he's trying to like reason with them, but he's like, guys, think about it. Who is the God who can rescue you from my power? He's like, no one can rescue you. I'm in charge. I do what I want to do. I'm the most powerful man on earth, right? This is all I need you to do. So for these guys, all right, luckily for them, Nebuchadnezzar happens to be in a good mood for once, and he likes these guys. He probably likes them because they are hard workers, and he looks around, and he's like, man, this nation has thrived under their short-term leadership, and they're young. By the way, can I just point out that we as God followers we should be liked by our employers and our bosses. Right, you get that? Because we're supposed to be different. Like, we're supposed to live different. That includes at work, even when we don't like going to work, because we work harder and we do a better job. And we don't get caught up in all the drama that everybody else gets caught up. And we're supposed to be more friendly. See, when we are a good employee, we are appreciated by our employer. And so Nebuchadnezzar, he's experiencing this. And Nebuchadnezzar's just like, man, I don't want to kill you. You guys are doing a great job. I don't want to take you out, but I need you to get in line. And so apologize, and let's try this again. And here these boys are. They have another decision to make. And so Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they replied to the king. They said, Nebuchadnezzar, we don't need to give you an answer to this question. Basically, what this means is they're saying, Nebuchadnezzar, we don't have a defense here. Nebuchadnezzar, we have nothing to say on this matter. Our decision is our decision. By the way, how does a God follower navigate secular culture and political chaos is what we've been looking at for the last couple weeks. Right? How do we do that? What did they do? They worked hard. They got educated. They got jobs. Right? They changed their names. They learned the language. They learned the culture. These guys were invested in their city. Right? They wanted what was best for their country, even if it didn't feel like their country. But they refused to shift allegiance from God to Nebuchadnezzar's God. And in doing that, they don't go on strike. I just want to point out, they don't stop doing their work. They don't whine. They don't complain about their bosses or the politicians or their leaders. See, Nebuchadnezzar, you got to remember, put this in the context. Nebuchadnezzar was their enemy, right? Nebuchadnezzar's the dude that had them kidnapped from their home. And as a middle school kid, he took everything from them. Yet they want what's best for Nebuchadnezzar and the foreign nation that they were living in. See, their attitude here is, I will politely say no, and I'll take my consequences. Why can't we think this way? Why can't we think this way? It's like these teenage kids, they have a better understanding of how God wants us to live in a world or in a nation that's completely opposing him than we do. See, these guys, they will not bow down. They are firm about that, but they also will not whine and complain about how unfair the world is towards them. They don't do it. And they look at the king. And they say, here's the deal. If the God that we serve exists, then he can rescue us from the furnace of blazing fire. And he can rescue us from the power from even you, the king. All right, he could do it. But even if he does not rescue us, he doesn't have to. We want you as king to know that we will not serve your gods and we will not worship the golden statue that you have set up. They're like, hey, you asked the question about what God can rescue us from that furnace over there. I just want to throw this out there, is that we know that the real God can. We know that he is completely able. But even if he doesn't, that won't be because of his inability to save us. All right, maybe this is just his plan. Maybe this is what he wants. See, they have the confidence in God, but they don't assume that they know what God will do, which is a really good place to be in. And so when Nebuchadnezzar hears this, he was filled with rage. I mean, he is mad. This is, by the way, Nebuchadnezzar losing control. And the expression on his face completely changed towards Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, meaning his face went from like he's trying to kind of plead with them, and now he is so angry. And he gave orders to heat the furnace 7 times more than was customary, meaning he's just telling them, hey, make the furnace as hot as you possibly can make it. And so then he commanded some of the best soldiers in his army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and throw them into the furnace of blazing fire. And so these men, in their clothes, right, they were tied up and they were thrown into the furnace of blazing fire. And since the king's command was so urgent, the furnace was so extremely hot, the raging flames actually killed those men who carried Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego up and threw them in. And so these 3 men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they fell bound, they're tied by ropes into the furnace of blazing fire. All right? By the way, notice how far God lets this go. Have you noticed that? This is pretty far. You know what I mean? If he was going to rescue him, I mean, think about it. He could have done this like way earlier. But God allows the boys to get promoted. All right, we saw that last week. Then God allows the statue to be built. Then God allows them to get the invite. Then God allows Nebuchadnezzar to command them to bow. And then God allows the people to notice. And then God allows them to be taken to the king. Then God allows them to be tied up. And then God allows them to be taken to the furnace. Then God allows the furnace to get hotter than normal. And then God allows them to be pushed in. And then God allows them even to fall and hit the ground. Okay? God could have stopped the situation before any of these happens, but he didn't. See, many times, God will not save us from our problem. Many times, he wants to help us through it. And that's what he does here. So they're thrown in. Got maybe 1 million people watching them. Get all burned up. They watch the soldiers die. You know, everybody's just like, dang. But then Nebuchadnezzar, he jumped up in alarm, right? And he said to his advisors that are with him, he's like, whoa, 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 whoa. As there would have been a doorway, kind of an opening in the side of it. They're like, didn't we throw 3 men bound into the fire? And they're like, yeah, of course. We got Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Those are the 3. And so they replied to the king. And then he exclaimed, he says, look. He's like, look, I see 4 men. Right? He's like, 1, 2, 3. Yeah, there's 4 in there walking around in the fire. And they're like walking around and they're unharmed. And what happened to the ropes? Like those are gone. And the 4th looks like a son of the gods. Now some people, all right, they have this question like, who was this 4th guy? What was it? I'll be honest with you, I don't know. Scholars debate this. This may have been an angel, sure, could have been, sent by God, or this could have been Jesus himself. It could have been God himself, right, in his physical form, and he might have been in there. We don't really know. It doesn't really matter. The point is that God saves them anyway. By the way, sometimes when you take a stand, God will let it go far, and then God will rescue you the last minute. He'll let it go uncomfortably far. And other times, maybe he doesn't rescue you at all. But what we do know is that he is always there. And so Nebuchadnezzar then approached the door of the furnace. Kind of like back when you're a kid, you're like at a bonfire or something, you're trying to get as close as you can, you know, to a fire, to a big bonfire, and it's like burning your face off, and you're like, ah, you know. And so he like gets up close, he's trying to cover his, he's trying to cover his face, and he goes to the door of the furnace, and he calls out. He's like, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He's like, you servants of the Most High God. Hey, you guys can come on out now. You know, I believe you're right. I was wrong. And so Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they came out of the fire. They're just kind of walking out like, dude, this is sweet. You know, think about how it was for them. Okay, that would have been awesome. And when all the advisors of the, you know, they all gathered around because everybody wants to see this. They all, like, they can't believe it with their minds, but they've seen it with their eyes. And they're just like, what is going on? And so they saw that the fire had no effect on the bodies of these men. Not a hair of their heads were singed. Their robes and their clothes were completely unaffected, and they didn't even smell like fire, okay? They didn't even have the smell of smoke on them. And so they're like, what just happened? And Nebuchadnezzar exclaimed. He said, praise to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He sent his angel and rescued his servants who trusted in him. And what'd they do? He said, they violated the king's command, my command, right? That I was so angry about. They violated my command, and they risked their lives rather than serve or worship any god except for their own God. And so he is excited about this, and he's just like, he just cannot believe it. And so, by the way, notice how his perspective changed. Have you noticed that? It completely different. Just minutes before, he's like, what God can rescue you from me? I'm the one in charge. Like, I am God to you. And now he's just like, wow, praise this God, all right? This God's crazy. Like, this God is so powerful. Like, that's what he's saying. It says, therefore, he says, I issue a decree. He was really big on these issuing decrees real quick. He didn't really think much about, he was kind of in the habit of not thinking about his decrees before he issued them. And so he issues this decree. He says that if any people or nation or language or anybody who says anything offensive against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, he says they will be torn limb for limb and his house will become a garbage dump. I don't really think that this is what God was going for here, okay? But he'll use it. Nebuchadnezzar, he's trying, right? I mean, he's trying. He's way off, but he's still trying, right? Actually, I think what he's trying to do here is he's more trying to appease God. Like, okay, God, all right, Jewish God, I believe now, okay? My bad, and we're actually going to find out next week. Nebuchadnezzar is going to figure it out, okay? But God's not done with him yet. And so he says, for there is no other God who is able to deliver like this. Like, no way. And then the king rewarded Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. So, question. How does a God follower navigate secular culture and political chaos? How do I live in a world that is in constant opposition to the God that I serve? See, for the Christian, the answer is plain and simple. Well, we do life God's way. We choose to do life God's way, even when it's inconvenient, and even when it doesn't make sense to the people around us. See, as God followers, when it's needed, okay, that's a key component. When it's needed, we take a stand. We don't take a stand over a bunch of stupid stuff. It's not worth it. That just causes division and causes fights. But we take a stand when it's needed. And not in anger and not in yelling and not in screaming and not in angry Facebook posts. We politely say no. And then we take our consequences. And then we take the hits that come without whining and without complaining. And as a believer and a God follower, we're good with that because we know that he's with us. See, here's the deal, right? Let's focus in. God may save us out of the fire, or God may send us into the fire to die well. But either way, we win because he wins. And you don't want to know a secret, right? Here's the deal. When we do this, right, when we stand up for the right things, and when we take the hits and the consequences that come from the world because we stood up for the right thing, and we do that without whining and complaining, guess what? The world will notice. The world notices that kind of stuff. And the people around us will notice. And what we're going to see over the next few weeks is we're going to see that Babylon will change because of the faithfulness of a few believers. Because they took a stand in the moments where they knew that it was right to take a stand. Not based off of all their opinions and what they think or how they lie like this, so I'm not going to... But based on what God wanted for them. And they changed the world. We'll pick up there next week. Let's pray. Lord, we thank you for this story, and it's something that it might be kind of hard for us to identify with because we've never been in a situation like that, but God, it really should make us wonder, like, well, if I were in that situation, what would I do? Would I have the courage to stand for what's right? Would I be able to do that in a polite way, in a kind way? But God, the reality is probably most of us in this room, we don't even do that on our stupid everyday decisions in our life. When we're faced with just a little bit of pressure from the world, we fail then. God, we need your help. We ask that you would help us through this, and we ask that you would help us to take a stand when it's right to take a stand. But we'd also do it with the right attitude and with the right heart. Lord, we thank you for this. But we desperately need your help, especially with what's going on in our world today and in this season. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. For this next song, you guys.